This podcast sponsored by Instant Technologies, the source for award-winning same-time products and applications. Instant Technologies offers proven same-time chat archiving and compliance solutions, IMQ management and help desk solutions, buddy list administration and maintenance tools to easily add, remove, and update enterprise-level buddy lists, and persistent chat rooms and same-time plugins. Instant Technologies, your proven source for same-time solutions. Find them today at www.instant-tech.com. That's www.instant-tech.com. It's time for the Taking Notes podcast with Julian Robichaud and Bruce L. Gort.
Everyone, and welcome to episode 75 of the Taking Notes podcast for Wednesday, January 30th, 2008. My name is Bruce Elgort, and I am here with
Julian Robichaud.
And we also have Andrew Pollack from Northern Collaborative Technologies on the line. Andrew, welcome to the podcast again.
Thank you, Bruce and Julian.
So, Julian, we're back from Lotusphere. Did you catch the flu?
No, I'm just kind of holding steady with the head cold I went down there with.
Yeah, I think Lotusphere is finally catching up with me. I didn't push it as hard as some of the people out there. You party animals know who you are. But we're back, and we thought we'd talk about, specifically today, things that happened during the opening general session, the announcements and all the other stuff, including the hot violin player.
Ah, yes. And just to back up a second, we actually recorded, I don't know, what, 30, 45 minutes of a podcast of us discussing the opening general session during Lotusphere. And I think the sound quality and our vocal quality was just so poor that we're just going to redo it.
Yeah, so here we are. And we have Andrew to help talk about some of the announcements. So where should we start, guys? Julian?
Well, you know, you mentioned violin player. I think we may as well start with the music.
Right on. So you walked into the opening general session, and what was playing?
Oh, gosh. You know, somewhere I've actually got a list of all the songs that we're playing.
Do you have
it? I wrote them all down.
Do you have it handy?
I will in a second if you keep talking.
Okay. Well, you know, I got to the opening general session a little late. I don't know why I got there late. But when I walked in, there was a band playing. I believe to the right of the stage, and right after I got in, I think they broke the orchestra broke out into, I think it was Led Zeppelin's Kashmir.
The first song they sang was Burning Down the House. That was the first on my list.
Okay, what was second?
John Cougar, The Wall.
Okay, third.
Okay, but this isn't the orchestra. The orchestra hadn't broken out yet
right.
At that point.
No, this was just the band. Right, yeah. And then you know they played Rollover after a few songs they played Rollover Beethoven, which went into a Beethoven song with the Orlando Symphony Orchestra, then Kashmir, then something else.
Yeah,
but anyway.
I got the impression that like 30% of that orchestra quit over having to play Kashmir. I don't know if that's really true.
No way, orchestras really like to play that kind of stuff, man. They just do. Look at the. Did you check out some of the what was it? The other violin, the other string players in that, they were rocking out, Andrew.
Okay.
So,
well, those were part of the people who didn't quit.
I couldn't help thinking that, you know, you got to be really careful playing alternate versions of Beethoven's music when you have Austrians in the room.
That's true.
That was my thought. I thought that was kind of bold. They did a good job, and, you know, certainly they certainly brightened up the stage some.
Yeah. It was fun. I like this whole this new trend of these live bands at the opening of Lotusphere. I guess started was last year. The first year they did that. That was the first year I remember having a good band.
I remember doing a live band anyway. And certainly you're not going to top what was out there last year. A lot of us wrote in and recommended they just make those guys the house band and bring them back every year. Everybody had a great time.
I think that band was from Boston.
Yeah, they are. In fact, we almost went and saw them. We had a Penumbra meeting down in Westford. And they were playing nearby. We almost made that a night out. Mm-hmm. But I think that the idea was and, you know, I hate to admit this, but I'm going to anyway. I didn't get that it was like symphony, so we have a symphony until they were done. I may be the only one in the room that just didn't get that.
Yeah, I think that was Mike Roden's first line, wasn't it?
Yeah, I got it just about that time, I think.
Oh, okay.
I think you were supposed to notice that when they had the playbooks on the chairs and everything else.
I don't know.
You know, when I go to the opening session, I'm really looking for content.
All right. Well, and then the first bit of content they threw at us was Atlantic, right? And then they just kick right off at the whole SAP integration and Atlantic and how there's this all this work and effort being done to integrate notes with SAP.
Yeah, and you know, while SAP is certainly not my cup of tea, I mean, it's just not something I work with much. The customers that we work with are really into it. And you know, we always used to use, back in the day when I used to be part of teams that would actually sell licenses and things, we would target customers that were moving to SAP as kind of our target market, because it just always seemed to coincide with a customer size that was, you know, I guess at that time, crossing that $500 million a year revenue. They were no longer knowing each other when they would meet in the hallways. It was too big to have that small company thing anymore. And they really, at that point, needed to get hold of what they were doing, getting hold of their processes. And, you know, the act of going to SAP would force them through really a serious rethinking of how they did things. And notes kind of really fit well into that.
Yeah. And I think the statistic they threw out was that of the top 100 IBM customers and the top 100 SAP customers, there was an 80% overlap.
Well, and it doesn't surprise me. Now, it's interesting because people were telling me, and they were really, you know, customers, people who actually spend money, which is, you know, a good thing, were telling me that they were really excited by the Atlantic thing. And the reason for that in the IT shops was they're used to SAP coming in and saying, yeah, IBM is all well and good, but if you really want to integrate with us, you need to be running Exchange. So they've been fighting this battle to fight that misconception. You know, Rocky and Bob last year had kind of some stage time because of their work on an SAP integration tool. But essentially, because it didn't cost people as much money, the software vendors really didn't want to push that. So this is a huge step in giving customers that affirmative nod that says, you know, hey, running SAP, guess what? You don't have to run Exchange. Domino integrates with that just as well, if not better.
And Exchange is going to provide such deep integration into you know, workflow and stuff like that, right?
Yeah, I mean, I've never understood. You know, you'd see these fantastic commercials for Microsoft's knowledge management stuff, and you'd be screaming at the television. You're going, that's a great commercial, but what do you have? If somebody calls this number, what are you going to give them? And it never seems to really matter to Microsoft. It's exactly the opposite as with IBM, right? IBM encrypts their marketing message so that no one can read it. But they have all these really great tools, all these great tools for getting a handle on what's going on. But they don't tell anyone. It's just, I guess it's a big secret.
That sounds like a good viral video, Andrew. You screaming at a Microsoft commercial on TV, us filming it, and then decrypting, you know, well, never mind.
Yeah, the decrypted marketing message there.
Exactly. All right, so Project Atlantic got announced. The CTO of SAP came out, shook hands with Mike, you know, made a couple statements. I don't recall what exactly he said. But I think on the blogosphere, you know, John had something about it. And it is huge, as you said, Andrew, you know, for a lot of customers. So, you know, good move on IBM and SAP to begin, you know, a deeper relationship. So,
yeah. Well,
you guys, calm down.
Oh, sorry. I was just going to say that I think another aspect of that is in terms of the larger customers who might be, I guess, continually getting bombarded by Microsoft to migrate away from Lotus Notes. That this is one more reason why that they can put on the table that yes, we should stay with Notes, and here's why, because you know, moving forward we'll have that much deeper integration.
Well, that's exactly right, and you know what makes customers happy is good, because they pay us, and that's always good. In this case, you know, it's just one more avenue, and what you see IBM doing is kind of almost circling Microsoft with, no matter where they look, a customer that wants to get rid of Microsoft stuff or wants to reduce their licensing, IBM is making it a very important point that they will have a way to help them, whether it's even if you're going to stay with Microsoft, we'll come and help you figure out the confusing licenses so you pay them less. Or, you know, if you can, if you don't need all that functionality, or if you're comfortable working with Symfony as we build that product up, you might be able to get rid of those licenses altogether for Office. You know, they're tired of seeing their own customers, their best customers, paying their competition with money that's then used to beat up on them.
I heard that that IBM should be tired of Microsoft taking money and giving it to their competitors, which is then going to be used to beat up on them.
Yep, there you go.
Okay.
All right. So let's.
You can do a funny little video or audio effect after that, Bruce.
I will. I will wield my power. Hey, so talking about, we're not going to go in order here. Kevin Cavanaugh came out and talked about Lotus Symphony.
Hey, Bruce, are you actually recording now?
Yeah.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure. I didn't know if it cut off when the Skype stopped.
No, that's, you know, we're going to let everyone know that Skype quit and, you know, we're not perfect, man. So who wants to talk about Lotus Symphony? Kevin Cavanaugh came out on stage, right? And Andrew, what did Kevin have to say about Symphony?
Well, I thought the Symphony message was interesting. Can you guys hear me okay?
You're perfect.
Yes.
Okay. I'm sorry, because Skype is sitting here telling me it can't hear me talking. Yeah. All right. So, Kevin Cavanaugh comes out, and he's talking about Symphony. And again, I don't do a lot of the desktop integration stuff. Really, that's, you know, people like John do a lot of that kind of work. But what interested me about that, first of all, it was probably the best presented part of the OGS. It looked to me like they really wanted to compete not just with Office integration with Notes, you know, open a file, save a file kinds of things, but they really wanted to go all out and compete with the whole .NET framework kind of approach and build their own. So now instead of just having JVM and .NET framework, now they want to have the sort of Lotus Symphony within the JVM to sort of round out that JVM competition to the .NET framework, which is very interesting. I think it's kind of ambitious. But again, if they can get just far enough that customers have an alternative, they can deprive some revenue from Microsoft, and that's a very powerful thing.
Mm-hmm. When did we first hear about Symphony again? Was it during the summer?
I can't tell you a date.
I don't know. I'm thinking it was after Notes 8 came out, which would have been around August.
Ah, that's correct. So, yeah, so it really hasn't been around that long. That's the freaky part, and I think Andrew's points are valid. You know, first of all, Kevin did do an excellent job. He told about, what are they going on, Beta 4 really soon?
Yeah, I think Beta 4 was what they said, and I think the extra things they announced were a Notes API. So like Andrew was saying, the programmability is going to be there for this release, and I think some quicker integration. Was that for this release or for a later one?
I didn't hear them commit to a specific release. I mean,
yeah, I'm not sure.
A lot of this stuff is still very up in the air.
Right. So that's at least coming, I guess, as far as that goes. And then they're working obviously on some international things like I guess a translation plugin and again the extensibility pit.
Yeah. Well. Absolutely, and IBM actually leads the market in terms of some of the really, really high-tech research on online live translations. So to be able to include that engine would be interesting.
Yeah, and I was talking to – I can't remember who it was, but I was talking to someone at IBM during Lotusphere, and they said that this team, the programmers who are working on Symphony right now are just so excited, and they're so jazzed up about working on this, and they have these grand plans for the product, and that it's just a great group of really excited people, which is kind of nice to hear.
Yeah, it's a nice change for what you usually hear about going on within IBM, which is nice.
Yeah.
So speaking about China, right? Didn't the guest speaker have some interesting things to say about China, Bob Costas?
I was in the second session, and he had toned that down quite a bit. Bob Costas was a kind of an odd choice for that, and I get the impression unofficially that maybe he wasn't the first or even one of the top choices with the writer's strike. They may have really had to stretch, and I'm wondering, when I saw him, I wondered if maybe Disney had helped get him through their media connections to get somebody up there.
Yeah. He was Julian. You did a great write up on your blog earlier this week, right? You want to talk about that? What the message
was?
Well,
you know, I was also in the second session, like Andrew was, and you know, I'm curious to know what, you know, how the talk changed from the first session to the second session, if it did. Someone, I think it was Rob McDonough, said that he was sitting at the front and turned around to look at the video prompter, and that the speech that Bob Costas was giving was actually a very rough outline on the teleprompter. So that's the kind of thing that would be very very likely to change between one telling and the next. But, you know, my take was that the concept was good because he deals with statistics. And, you know, he could have been able to make a very good point about having to dig through all of the stats and all the different numbers and gather these things together and create useful patterns out of the information. And Jess Stratton actually came back and said, oh, yeah, you know, I actually mentioned that too, and I had a quote from him. And the quote that she had was that he said, in the age of all this information, find the relevant puzzle pieces amongst all the hundreds of useless facts out there. And I don't know if he said that in the second OGS that I was sitting in, because that's a very succinct way of putting it, and I don't remember hearing that. I remember thinking he should have said something like that, but I'm not sure.
I think there was some irony there. I mean, if you looked, you know, Mike Roden had put up, you know, the Google slide showing a huge number of unreadable number of results as a way of showing how much content there was out there and how futile all that was unless you did something with it. And then it was just ironic to me because in the salon, one of the kids that they had brought in had showed almost the same slide. It was a different search term, but he had even highlighted the same part of the screen, showing all of this incredibly useful data that he could use to mine to make kind of interesting statistics. And I think the juxtaposition was phenomenal.
I also think it's funny, Andrew, that you call the speakers at Lotus Salon kids.
Yeah, I guess I'm getting a little older, but they seemed, that was kind of my impression. They were very eager, they were very bright and very naive. You know, I think when they grow up, they're going to do some really interesting work. In the meantime, I really didn't see anything unique, right? We had one guy who could take cell phone chaos and noise and make it louder, more annoying, cell phone chaos and noise. We had another one who's convincing people to pretend that there's no gasoline and try to live as if there were no gasoline. I don't know if she's expecting them all to starve to death or, you know, how far they want to take that imagination because, you know, you're not going to be able to get biofuel really easily. And, it, you know, so there's this whole thing kind of built on kind of unrealistic starting points. But again, they were bright and interesting, and when they grow up, they'll do interesting things.
I was in the second Lotus Salon, and did they have any of the videos that they had requested, you know, from the audience up in your session at all, or there weren't any in the second one?
I don't recall any videos, but okay. I may have already tuned it out at that point. I know that some of the people around me by that point in the thing, within the first few minutes, were playing DS3s or, you know, Nintendo DS things, and one person was reading a book. So, you know, it really wasn't intriguing this tech audience all that much, but they're not the most artistic group anyway.
Yeah. Slight diversion to the Lotus Salon 2.08. So I also noticed in the second Lotus Salon, which I was in, it wasn't very it didn't seem like all the people who were in the OGS were in Lotus Salon. So I think a lot of people blew it off.
Yeah, I think it probably had, what, a third, maybe a quarter of the people in it? Yeah. I mean, the room wouldn't have held. I think the OGS session room could hold 6,000 people at capacity. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that the salon would have held 2,000 if anybody had showed up.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's move on to the notes and domino stuff that was talked about in the OGS. Who was the guy who hosted Jeff Eisen and Russ Holden? Who was that?
Mm-hmm. Who was the person who actually did the? It was Alistair, wasn't it? What's his last name?
It was Alistair. We'll put his name in the show notes. I always forget it. So they came out and they talked about all the great things they done in like Notes 8 and the Domino Server 8, as well as 8.01 and 8.5. Right, guys?
Well, kind of.
Heck yeah.
They talked about some of it, you know. This was the part of the show really that I found the most frustrating, right? Because we've been working with design partner programs, and I know certainly the three of us have a pretty good idea of what was there to be announced. And at this point, they go over to give Maureen, who's, if there is as close to a hero of the Notes core community, it has to be Maureen Leland, right? She stuck through the product through no matter how bad it got. She's always been there working on Designer. She's had years and years and years of work to get some of the most incredible things that we've seen, things we've been asking for a decade, and they gave her 4 minutes in the opening session to show, you know, she even had the new Lotus Script Editor up, but she didn't have enough time to just hit enter to show us the type ahead and things that would have given the whole place a standing ovation. Mm-hmm. So I found the prioritization to be very frustrating at that point.
Mm-hmm. So again, you know, Jeff went through some of the things on the Notes client and Ross on the Domino server, and I guess, you know, they just went back and forth, and they had like a seesaw, I think, where the features were piled up on one side, then the other guy went, the features piled up on the Domino server, and everything balanced out at the end there. And Andrew, you know, you spoke about Maureen's demo. She demonstrated X Pages, right?
Right. My number one hottest new feature coming, the one I can't wait for, is X Pages. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And just to clarify, that's 8.5, not 8.01.
Correct. Yeah. Maureen's, I think, committed on Andrew's blog of all places, right, that 8.5 would include X Pages for web apps, but in a future version for Notes apps as well. Right, Andrew?
Yeah. I'm not the only place that she made that commitment. It was the first place I saw her do it publicly. She's also got that same thing on her blog, and I think had done it there first. The key is they can't commit yet to 8.5 for the Notes client. It's certainly a goal, but I don't think they're even 100% sure of all the pieces of exactly how they're going to make that happen. And the question is, do you hold X Pages just to have feature parity right away? And this was brought to my attention as someone's big concern. And I know that there's some discussion on it in Westford, so I posted it on the blog today. I said, you know, here's the description of the worst case as it was given to me by somebody very concerned. What do you guys think? I don't see the problem. And the overwhelming answer in terms of comments on the blog has been, yeah, they don't care either. Give us the feature, and when you get caught up, you get caught up.
So, Andrew, why don't you step us through, you know, what X Pages is all about? You know, you have a white paper you have on your blog, you know, which gives a high level, you know, view of it. But I mean, just give us, you know, a good example of how we'd use X Pages in an application.
Well, all right. So the big thing is it solves at the very core underneath one of the biggest problems. One of the biggest, I don't want to say problems, but one of the biggest downsides to the way the Notes architecture works. You know, we've got this concept of one note at a time. You're looking at a note. You might even have different forms to view the same note and call that a document when you're opening it up. You might even use subforms and different parts that come together to show how you display it. But you're really only looking at one piece of data at a time, unless you're looking at a view, and then you're only looking at part of the data that you can't really work with. So that's inherently backward from almost every other kind of system out there, you know, where you're looking, where you worry about the design first, and then you bring in your data and manipulate it from wherever it comes from. Well, X Pages it really flips that over. So you design this layout page, and you say, all right, this section here with these fields, I want this to refer to a particular Notes document, and you can find it by this key. And then down here, these fields, this refers to data that's in a view, so I want you to use this field and this field and this field as a group and repeat that once for every document in the view. So to give an example of what that would mean on my blog, I'm one of the few people out there who wrote his own blog software. A lot of people suffered through the early versions of that, and at least the new versions people seem to like reasonably well. What I do on mine is kind of different. I have a story document, but every comment on my blog is its own document. And they load in, but getting them to load in on the page correctly and format and count, that's all done with Ajax and lookups and background calls. It took me several days to figure out how to get that right. With X Pages, I could redo that in about a half an hour on a single X page, and it would give me the ability to provide a lot more flexibility and power. And that's really what it's all about. So they look like they're going to be just huge.
Julian, what did you take away from Designer 8.5?
Designer 8.5, you know, I think the X X-Pages were a big thing. I was kind of wondering when they were displaying or when they were demoing them, if it was any relation to the X-Forms demo that they gave us last year at Lotusphere. And I have no idea.
No, I think its heritage is to a large extent within the component designer, although there's some mistakes people are making in thinking that it's just a wholesale, you know, cut-paste of CD, and it's really not.
Right. So I don't know what happened to that thing they showed us last year.
Mm-hmm. Well,
they've
been trying to get there for a long time. I remember having conversations with Maureen years ago when we first started talking about component designer versus, you know, domino designer, and she was the one that pointed out to me this inherent difference of working with one note and different designs versus working with one design and different data sources or notes. And by when she did that, I realized that she was showing me a solution to many, many, many things we've been working around. All the weird DB lookups, you know, to repopulate all the scripts that on save copy the updated company name to all the subforms, and all those nightmarish hacks that you have to do to get around that just go away with the new paradigm. And I was really impressed that she solved so many problems so deeply. So I think for years she's been working on how do I put this in notes without breaking notes, because remember, we have to be backward compatible.
Right.
And I think X Pages is the ability from her perspective to really put that in. And it's techniques that were developed and were meant to be component designer pieces. Workplace ultimately didn't sell for some very good reasons, but there were some good technologies developed, and this is one of them.
Mm-hmm. So let's take a step back to 801. Julian, do you have anything else to add on 8.5?
Well, 8.5 Designer and Eclipse. I mean, that was the other big thing they demoed was Domino Designer running in Eclipse. Mm-hmm. So, you know, all sorts of advantages there. You know, class browser for Lotus script classes, and everyone clapped. And so that's the other really big thing on the designer side for 8.5. On the admin side, there were a bunch of stuff. I'm not really an admin, so, you know, I have a list, but I don't know how much that impacts your typical admin out there.
Well, it continues to get better, particularly around policies and around desktop management. You know, these features continue to get better and better and better and better. With 8.5, they get even better. On the designer, I don't think we want to pass the chance to talk about not just having a great Lotus script editor, right, with type ahead and everything else, but also having type ahead on your own classes and having a CSS editor that's you know, best in class. It's Eclipse. A Java editor it's almost the reference implementation of a Java editor. You have a JavaScript editor. You have the CSS editor, the HTML editors. So, I mean, all of these editors now, because you have Designer and Eclipse, and that's just all of a sudden we go from, you know, using essentially Notepad to do this stuff to having world-class edit capabilities.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, huge jump, huge, huge jump. So, I wanted to segue back to 801. We're going to see 801 really soon. And a couple things we saw at Lotusphere and the OGS. One was the Google gadgets right in the sidebar. Julian, you want to talk about that? Julian?
Oh, I'm sorry. Was I on mute?
Yes, you were. So did you?
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Did you hear the question?
I heard you just fine.
All right, go for it.
You just didn't hear me.
I did, barely. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, they had the widget wizard, right? And so they have this concept called My Widgets, where you can use this widget wizard to go and kind of drag and drop a few things to make your own sidebar apps. And the big example they gave was taking Google Gadgets and dragging those to the sidebar and making that a sidebar thing. And apparently what you can do then is if once you've dragged or created or wired a sidebar widget that you've done with this widget wizard, you can email it to someone else and then they can use it too, which is kind of interesting. And I guess they said there's also going to be some kind of catalog option for, I guess maybe people can store their favorite widget in a catalog can go and get them, which I'm guessing would be like an Eclipse update site, but maybe slightly different.
It looked really interesting to me, and it looked really interesting to do just little stuff. You know, even when I'm dealing with all the cultures, how many times have I had to open a document to grab a UPS tracking number, you know, copy it, paste it onto UPS's site? You know, how cool would it be to just write a little gadget that just recognizes that hot text, right?
And so there's the live text piece, right?
Well, that's
that whole live text thing, right? Yeah. Talk
about
that.
How cool to do that.
Go for live text.
Again, you know, the ability to just have it recognize based on string recognition that something is more important than it might look in your email. Like I said, a UPS tracking number, just because it can see that. I mean, we're all used to this, right? When Notes sees what looks like a URL, it automatically makes it active. Okay?
Right.
So imagine being able to do that for much more than URLs. Imagine you could say phone numbers, click this, and it makes your phone ring if you happen to be a VoIP person. Or, you know, like I said, tracking numbers or airline reservation numbers, all kinds of stuff that you could have something happen just by their being in a rich text field.
Yeah, and it's almost like, you know, I guess that with 8.0 you have the new auto spelling or the inline spell check for rich text fields. And so you get the little squiggly line when the word is misspelled. Well, the way they demo this live text thing is you have a very similar thing underneath word patterns. And so it would recognize things like names or, like you said, UPS tracking numbers or, you know, whatever you specify as some kind of word pattern to look for. And then it can automatically wire somehow back over to these sidebar apps. Which I think they actually named what kind of recognition engine that was being used, but it sounded very interesting. And I guess that's something coming with 8.01, so sometime in February when that comes out, we'll be able to take a look.
Yeah, I think it's going to be an exciting feature. I mean, 8.01 really finishes the 8.0 client, in my mind, sufficiently that I can be much more comfortable recommending a mass rollout. You know, some of the stuff, I really like the whole idea of the contact stuff that happens in 8.0, where it remembers who you're talking with and automatically pops their name back up. But not having the ability to then trim that list really kills me. So, yeah. You know, a lot of those things really kind of need to be finished. But I think you're seeing some huge promise. And we're just beginning to see the power, right? 8.0 gives you all this overhead and sort of a taste of what you might be able to get with Eclipse, but you're kind of left sometimes scratching your head and saying, all right, now do something. And, yeah. And it, you know, it's kind of like sometimes, you know, you'll go and you buy some really expensive new hot new computer or hot new something or other, and you plug it in and it's still a computer at the end of the day, right? So there's almost this kind of momentary letdown when you realize that you just spent a lot of money and sure it's faster, but it's the same Windows screen. And that's, I guess, I'm sure you Mac people never have that. But the Notes 8.1, 8.01, and certainly 8.5 really starts to show you what this thing is going to be able to do. And then you look at some of the work like Carousel that Nathan has been working on and some of those kinds of things and start seeing, you know, this graphical representation of data. I mean, as ISVs, this is a gold mine.
And also you mentioned Mac. Now, I think 8.01 is also the Ubuntu and the Mac client, right?
8.01 is the Ubuntu. Well, 8.5 of the Mac beta came out, which is really not
right.
8.5, right? It's not the 8.5 like it's the Notes. I mean, the Windows 8.5. But you, like you said, they did announce client support for Ubuntu, and there was one other, right?
Well, I thought the Mac was there on the list for 8.01. Maybe not.
No, I don't think so.
You don't?
No, I don't think so.
I think they've got the 8.5 beta out for the Mac.
Correct.
Right,
and
they definitely have that.
And it's meant to be 8.1 level of functionality, as I understand it.
Right, so why call it 8.5? Who knows?
Well, probably because that's the code base. Remember, this is IBM, and they don't think in terms of marketing so much. Ever. You know, right? Who was it? Somebody, I forget, a long time ago used to say that if IBM sold sushi, they'd market it as uncooked dead fish. You know.
Oh, boy. All right. Listen, we have a lot more to talk about, right? We have Bluehouse. We have Lotus Protector. We have Lotus Foundations. So let's quickly go through some of those things. Those things are all in the category of Julian. How would we phrase it?
I guess we phrase it as things we don't know anything about, really.
Or, no, I'm not going to say cold, dead fish, right? But we don't know, right? Let's take Bluehouse, for example. Bluehouse is being marketed currently as a software, as a service type of, what do you call it? what would you call it? Software as a service, you know, a hosted solution whereby, you know, you and your customers could, store and share files, have online meetings, have chat, have some contact management, and as well as activities, I believe. Have we seen it? You know, is it a product that's going to be shipping soon? No. I think it's going to be in beta if it's not already. I do remember hearing something about that during the opening general session. I don't remember. You guys have anything to add on Bluehouse at this point?
Just looking at what they're saying, right? It looks to me like if you could sort of say what would a best hope for an IT shop doing an entirely web browser-based notes environment with all the extras, all the accessories, quicker and quick place and same time and connections and all of the pieces all kind of put together. What would it look like? And then can we package that on the web and call it Bluehouse and manage it for an IT department that's too small to really do that themselves, without them therefore having to buy, 35 different servers and build a building next to a nuclear power plant. Mm.
Well, there was also Lotus Foundations too, right, Andrew? You want to tell us something about that?
Yeah, right. This is a trend. It's plug and play. In this case, Yellow, but you're what's called a black box solution. You plug this 1U rack mounted server thing in, and suddenly you have a domino environment. And as I understand it, they just bought it like a week before they did the acquisition. So clearly at this point, they had no idea exactly what was going to be in it or how it would be priced or where you could go buy one yet. Mm-hmm. So I think we're all kind of waiting to see. Now, I will tell you that I work with an IBM business partner up here who does kind of get more into the IBM marketing and selling programs and has marketing points and even actually occasionally meets with his local rep. And he's real interested in selling this thing to the small and medium businesses up here. So, maybe it's got traction. People do like plug and play sometimes.
Yeah. I wonder how Bluehouse is going to compete with Foundations. Obviously Foundations is this little box you install, on your premise, as opposed to Bluehouse being software as a service, right, to compete with things like Salesforce.com, Microsoft, Live and stuff like that. It'll be interesting.
Well, different markets, right? And again, in one case you can be connected and in one case you can. I don't know about where you are, but certainly up here where I am, there are plenty of towns where connectivity is dial-up still or satellite. Mm-hmm. You're not going to do something like Bluehouse, if everybody in the office has got a modem on their desk still.
That's a good point. Before we hop on to Lotus Protector, actually, let's take Lotus Protector. At Lotusphere, Mike Roden got up on stage and announced Lotus Protector. And Jillian and I actually have a podcast that we did with author Fontaine and Brian Reed of Lotus, where we spent about 15 or 20 minutes talking about Lotus Protector. So you want to hold off on that, guys, for now? Is that okay?
Yeah, because if you've got 15 or 20 minutes now more into it than I have.
Yeah, and we also have another podcast with David Marshak talking about unified communications, and which was also talked about during the opening general session. So we're going to park that one for now. And let's talk about, before we forget, we have Qwiker and connections to talk about. We heard about Lotus Qwiker 8.1 coming in March, I believe. And I think... tell me if my memory serves me correct here, that they were going to introduce some type of new file sharing mechanism in Qwiker. Guys, you remember anything about that?
Going to have to pass on it. I don't Qwiker.
Yeah.
I'm kind of a core functionality kind of guy.
I don't know. I think they kind of re-announced Qwiker Personal, didn't they? Was that the same thing or something different?
That was one of the big confusion points, right? Because they came up and they said they had shipped everything that they had said they were going to ship by August of last year. And I know a lot of people around me were asking, well, then where's my Qwiker Personal Edition? And I think they're repackaging that. But again, I'm kind of taking the same approach with Qwiker that I have with some of the others. There are a lot of people whose businesses work with customers who are going to be really liking these things, but that's just not my business. And I can't keep up with that at the same time I'm doing all the security work that I'm doing and the core product code.
Yeah, understood. We'll have to get Rob Novak and some of the other quicker people on, and we can talk about that. But all I recall is something about some new file sharing mechanisms in 8.1, as well as some refined UI stuff. So, okay to move on to connections, guys?
Oh, sure.
All right. Lotus Connections 2.0 was announced, and again, I think from what I'm able to gather that it's something they want to ship in 2008 sometime. And one thing that I did notice between all the various product lines, and I actually had a conversation with Carol Jones, is, you know, IBM has had this initiative called One UI, and if you look carefully at all the quicker connections, notes, the UIs are turning blue. Have you guys noticed that?
Only after you mentioned it.
I mean, I kind of noticed that they were all starting to look more alike, and I think if you look at the initiative that they're working on, they're looking at some of Bob's work that he's been announcing on his blog. They're talking about what can we redo with the HTML engines and things like that, you know, the HTTP generators. And I think the goal is eventually to default whenever possible to that kind of look so that, yeah, everything kind of looks the same. You know, not a bad idea. You know, here's an interesting idea. We've got a multi-trillion-dollar company or something like that with a bunch of products. Why not have them look similar to each other?
Yeah. I'm trying to recall some of the new stuff in Connections. I don't follow Connections that closely. I know that, speaking of Connections, I think the guys from Lotus 911 put up the bleedyellow.com site, which is running quicker, I guess, 1.02, I assume. And they have that probably connected to Domino somehow. Would you guys take away anything from Connections 2.0?
Well, you know, they announced a lot of integration points with Connections and other products. They talked about, like, you know, what, social text and some wiki software. Correct. I think they even mentioned something about, Yahoo Answers and what, Facebook, maybe?
Yeah, I think you're right. I think they're wanting to open up Connections to other social networking, you know, products. Andrew, you... What's your take on Connections in general? You know, being that you guys, you know, have modems and stuff out there.
Well, like, again, you know, we're not quite the end of the world, obviously. But the thing about Connections is, it's part of this whole need to feel ultimately Web 2.0, whatever that means. And I'm kind of waiting for someone to make money at it. It really reminds me a lot of the late 80s. Everybody was, you know, the big thing was we were all going to be Kleenex. We were all going to be the household name for our brand, whatever it was we were selling. I think it's interesting stuff. I think it's great that we're all trying to be socially connected. But I don't really know all that much about what that means from a business perspective yet. And I'm really kind of sitting by the sidelines and waiting. I don't see a lot of easy integration points to write things for it yet. So far, to me, it's still very consumer. And as far as Web 2.0, I'm not entirely done with Web 1.0. I may replay that one to try to get a better, higher score before I upgrade. We'll kind of wait and see. Mm-hmm.
Julian, what about yourself?
I don't have any personal experience with Connections, so it's very hard for me to look at what they announced and what they showed and say, oh, that's so much better than one, because I just don't know. I mean, it would be good maybe to talk to Mac Wadera, someone like that, about all the cool new things that's going on with Connections. I mean, the message that I heard kind of outside of the opening session was that, you know, Connections has been a product that's been evolving to, you know, the customer needs of the people that have actually been early adopters for the product. And so, you know, kind of the message I was hearing was that they're trying to make a lot of improvements around the people who are actually trying to use it right now. And again, I'm just not one of those people. Mm-hmm. Now, one of the things they said in the opening session I didn't catch if it was something that was immediately available in Connections 2.0 or something they were working on was replication. And they mentioned that you would be able to take certain pieces of Connections and take them offline and then use it on the airplane or wherever you happen to be and then go and replicate back up and send your changes up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that's really neat. I just still ask this question. When you say use it offline, for what? Maybe I'm just not getting it yet, and I just need to – obviously I'm getting old because I didn't get the salon session either, but I'm waiting for someone to show me how this is business. You know, even my 14-year-old takes a look at Facebook and she thinks that's already old news and doesn't really want any part of it. So I'm wondering if we're just trying to catch up with this young generation for no reason other than they seem to all think it's really cool and that's where the money's going right now. But, you know, it's just like in the late 90s when we were all just selling advertising to each other to promote our websites. At some point at the end of all that advertising, somebody's got to sell something.
Yeah. No.
And it wasn't happening.
Totally agree. It's kind of like Second Life, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, I went into Second Life and I put some pretty good effort into understanding it. I built a couple things. I went to probably more effort than a lot of the Lotus community did. But ultimately, I didn't see any way that this had anything to do with business yet. It's a great proving ground. It reminded me like of CompuServe back in the day. CompuServe wasn't the internet, but from CompuServe, you could kind of get a feel for what we might be able to do someday.
Yeah. Well, maybe that's where the younger generation one day is going to show us how to use these tools in a way that we just have no idea. Kind of like the gaming community is doing, you know, now with certain things. So, I mean, like the gaming community showed that, well, how the Lotus Salon 2.08 speakers spoke about the gaming communities and what they do and how they collaborate and do all this other kind of stuff.
Yeah, I see, and I haven't seen them show me anything yet. I mean, you know, Second Life has some really interesting things. There's some things that are great about it for meetings, for, you know, it's a neat kind of environment, and eventually we'll be using environments like this, no question. Whether we need to spend a great deal of time in this one yet, I'm not entirely convinced. I think we should let the gamers game themselves silly in there, and eventually their technology will keep up, will catch up to where we can do some interesting things in it. But other than that, are we really learning from the gamers? Is World of Warcraft really all that revolutionary? To me, it's just a linear step off the role-playing games that we've seen for years. Mm.
Maybe we can get Jess Stratton on, give us some insights.
Yeah, I think she doesn't agree with me.
Yeah, as seen on Andrew's blog posting. All right, we covered a lot, guys. What did we miss?
The other big thing was mashups.
Lotus mashups. Julian, why don't you tell us about Lotus mashups?
I have nothing to tell. I don't know.
Yeah. Creating mashups, again, is, you know, I've had, you know, the ability to do this kind of thing in Salesforce.com for a while, you know, create some Google map mashups with some of my contact data. You know, again, is it providing true business value? Well, first of all, is it cool? Yeah, it's cool. Andrew, what do you say?
Again, mashups. I put it in a similar category to Portal, except that at least it doesn't cost a fortune to get started with. You know, a portal's great. It's a doorway. It connects things to something else, but you still have to have things that need to be connected. Mashups, same kind of an idea. What are you mashing to what, and what do you hope to gain from it? Mm. I think we could spend a lot of time with these neat words, but so I want to see somebody do something that actually promotes business.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it seems to me that the interesting thing they showed with mashups was that they're putting a lot of the effort that they had with some of the visualization pieces they had with like many eyes and stuff like that, that somehow that is getting integrated or kind of tacked onto the mashups piece so that you can have these mashed up bits of data kind of here and there, but that they're going to be trying to provide some tools to help you connect or make sense of some of the aggregated data, which again, I just don't know that much about the product. You know, they showed us a few minutes about it, and then that was it. So I don't know. I mean, the second OGS was 2.5 hours long.
So. I remember getting a text message from you, you know, I'm still in the OGS after 2.5 hours, so I think that did go a little longer than the first one. So, all right, do we have anything we want to talk about at WebSphere Portal at this point, or...
Yeah, I'd be the wrong guy for that.
Yeah, me too. So I kind of tuned myself out. You know, granted, I work with WebSphere Portal, but I didn't really find anything terribly exciting in the announcements that Larry made. So, Julian, did you?
I am not a Portal guy either.
Okay.
If I hear the word Portal in a session, I get up and leave.
All right. So anything else, guys, for the OGS? And again, we're going to have other podcasts coming, you know, really soon with a lot of other great content. In fact, Julian, you spoke with a lady from the WebSphere Portal Accelerator team, right?
Yes, Rebecca, and I'm going to just completely destroy her last name, but I think it was Buisan. something like that. And she was she talked about the portal accelerators and specifically the dashboard accelerator, which the interesting part about that was that it integrates directly with Notes.
Mm-hmm. What exactly does it do? Because isn't Portal fast enough by itself? What else does what is accelerating?
No, it's, not.
It's just, is this another layer? How many layers do we need?
No, an accelerator in the Portal world, I think, is essentially an application. Right. So it's a bundle of functionality that's focused at something like HR or employee self-service. Or
I was going to pick a different word for what it was a bundle of.
Yes. Yeah. let's not use that word.
So anything else, guys? I mean, we covered – we're probably almost an hour in to episode 75 here, and we covered a lot during the OGS. I guess we'll have another podcast really soon. I think I'm repeating myself here, but to talk about all the other great things that happened at Lotusphere, including, you know, what happened on Sunday. I have some stuff on Business Development Day, Jamfest, Lotusphere Idol, tons of other great stuff. So if you guys don't have anything else, do you, Andrew? Yes, no?
Not really. It was a great Lotusphere. It impressed me. They weren't finally, for the first time in years, they weren't trying to push me off of my product. You know, they actually looked at Lotus Notes and Domino as the thing that you were there for. And I thought that was really refreshing and nice. Mm-hmm.
Julian, how about yourself?
What else do I think we need to talk about, or did I have a good time?
No, did you have a good time? You know, anything else you want to add?
No, we're going to have more podcasts. They had like what, four opening general sessions throughout the 4 days there. They had the OGS, they had the
Unified Communications.
The Unified Communications one, they had the App Dev one, and I think there was a fourth one as
social,
well on
I think
Wednesday.
It was social networking, I think, or social computing. Yeah.
Yeah, so it was certainly a week full of announcements, and like Andrew mentioned, with regards to Maureen demoing stuff with 8.5 or whatever, even the things that we saw during the general sessions were just sort of the tip of the iceberg in terms of the things that are truly coming out. So they got a lot of stuff coming out.
Yeah, and we'll add to some of the upcoming podcasts some of the stuff in the labs like Beehive and. What's that tagging one they had? I forgot the name of it. Tag It maybe or something like that. A lot of interesting stuff coming up. So if that's it, guys, we'll throw episode 75 in the can. And we want to thank Instant Technologies for sponsoring this episode of the podcast. That's it. Andrew, thank you for giving us your insights into Lotusphere 2008 opening general session stuff. And we hope to have you back soon.
I hope to be back. It's been fun.
And Julian, it's always a pleasure. I enjoy seeing you in person once or twice a year. And I just enjoy seeing you.
It was a good time, Bruce.
It was a good time. We'll talk about those good times on maybe 76. So
yeah, this is getting uncomfortable. We should probably end this. Yeah.
All right. On that note, thanks, everyone.
I miss you already.
Yeah. Oh, I'm crying, man. No. All right. That's it for 75 of the Taking Notes podcast. We'll talk to you guys real soon.
Bye-bye.
This podcast sponsored by Instant Technologies, the source for award-winning same-time products and applications. Instant Technologies offers proven same-time chat archiving and compliance solutions, IMQ management and help desk solutions, buddy list administration and maintenance tools to easily add, remove, and update enterprise-level buddy lists, and persistent chat rooms and same-time plugins. Instant Technologies, your proven source for same-time solutions. Find them today at www.instant-tech.com. That's www.instant-tech.com.